Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Project Zion podcast. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and today we are bringing you another edition in our series, What's Brewing, where we explore how God is showing up in the neighborhood and people of faith are living out mission in transforming ways. Today, we're here with Chris and Matt Davison of Headwaters Mission Center. Both Matt and Chris serve in Mission Center leadership roles. Chris serves in the office of High Priest and Matt in the office of 70. And we are delighted they are with us today. Hello, Chris and Matt. Thanks for joining us on Project Zion Podcast.
Hello.
Hello, Robin.
All righty. Well, we are just going to jump in. So Chris and Matt, we want to get to know you better. So tell us a little bit about you, like where'd you grow up? What was it like to grow up in the church or to become part of Community of Christ? I know you don't have the same story on that. And how did your life as an ordained minister begin?
All right. Well, I'm going to get started. And my story is not quite as interesting as Chris's, but you'll get to hear it anyway. I am born and raised in the church, so I'm actually fourth or fifth generation Community of Christ. I grew up in Eugene, Oregon. That's where I called my original home. And I took a normal path, I would say. So I was baptized at the age of 8. And even then, I took my faith pretty seriously. For me, faith was it was certainly an intentional choice. And I was always one of those serious little kids. But the other thing about my growing up faith-wise was that the church was my community. Both my parents were heavily involved in the local congregation and at the time districts. And because of that, I got to visit a lot of different congregations, and I traveled with my dad when he would preach and teach, and that became kind of what my identity was, is I was a Community of Christ kid, well, RLDS. I really took that to heart, and that became foundational in my faith. After that, I was actually, as far as being ordained, I was ordained very young. I would think you would say that now. I was ordained at 16 to the office of priest. I was still in high school at the time, but again, I took my faith pretty seriously, and I wanted to serve wherever God wanted me to go. And I made that commitment. So from there, growing up in Oregon, I decided to get out of the rain and the clouds for a little bit. And I went to college in California. And living in California for the 5 years of my college is where I met Chris. And this is where we're going to put a pause on my story, and we're going to listen to Chris's story so that she can get you caught up to where she started and where we met while we were both living in California.
Yeah, and my story is a little bit longer than Matt's, but I grew up in Michigan. I was the only child to two very loving parents, and I did not grow up in the church. My church exposure when I was young would have been maybe going to occasionally Sunday school and church with my grandparents or my cousins, and they happened to go to the local Methodist church. When I was in high school was when I started to begin to explore my faith. I had friends that would invite me to Christian concerts, and I remember feeling something that I would identify now as the Holy Spirit working within my heart. So when I started college, I went to college at Central Michigan University, which was really near my home. It was in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and decided that I would start going to church. And so I actually started going to church at the local Lutheran church because that was where my aunt had gone. And so that was the only church I knew. And so I started going. I began going there, but then my best friend at the time was Peter Smith. And Peter started going, about that same time, he started going to the Community of Christ. And we would get together and we would talk about our experiences and share about our faith journeys and two different churches. And so then I'd go over to his place and meet his friends, which were young adults who happened to go to the Community of Christ. And there was a young adult group at Central, a very active young adult group. And I got to meet some of those people. And so they invited me one time to go on a fall retreat with them. And I thought, sure, why not? Give this a shot. And so I went. And I had a very, very good weekend and really got to know some of the young adults in that community. And so I was still attending the Lutheran church, but I was attending young adult group at Central. And so the young adult group at Central, we met on Sunday nights, and we were almost a congregation within the congregation at that time. So like we would get together, we would sing songs. I learned a lot of camp songs at that time. We would study scriptures and learn, explore different topics of faith. And in that process, I really had found myself growing spiritually. Amidst all that, I had people that were starting to see more in me and identifying gifts within me that I didn't even know I really had. And so they would ask me to do things and I'd be like, I don't think I can do that. And they're like, yeah, we think you can. So, and we will support you on that and we will help you. And I started to grow not only spiritually, but personally, because people saw more in me than I saw really in myself at that time. And so I had found some mentoring in that process. And somewhere in there, I had actually, I kind of had 2 feet. You know, I had 1 foot in Community of Christ, and I also had a foot over in the Lutheran Church. And so made the decision to be baptized that I was attending the Lutheran Church. And so went through catechism at the Lutheran Church and actually was baptized. And they, at the time, you know, they would say, oh, you're being baptized a Lutheran. I'd be like, no, I'm being baptized a Christian. And I'm making my commitment to Christ. So I continued to get more involvement within with the young adult group and more familiar with starting attending Sunday mornings at the Mount Pleasant congregation more often, and really, though, finding my spiritual home here. And I can remember the clinching point for me was we had traveled across the state to another congregation. And I remember being amazed because of the relationships. Like people from Mount Pleasant knew people over in Muskegon, Michigan. like, how is this possible that these people would know each other? But there's this automatic connection that you just didn't see in any of my other experiences. And that kind of was almost like the tipping point for me in my decision to want to join Community of Christ. And because it was like the one last, like, yeah, it was the tipping point. So because the relationships that and the ties that people had with each other. And so I remember on the way home from that experience saying, okay, so if I wanted to join Community of Christ, like, what would I need to do? And they're like, well, you would need to be baptized. And then, and I'm like, okay, so I've done that. So what else do I need to do? And they're like, no, you need to be baptized within the Community of Christ and confirmed. And that really, I really struggled with that for quite a while. And I'm so, okay, I really need that. I really need to think about that. And took some time with it, prayed about it. And really felt like God was saying, you know, Chris, you just need to do this. And I know this is a struggle for you, but you just, this is your home. This is your spiritual home. This is where you need to be. And so I found myself in a place where I was willing to say, yes, I'm willing to do this. There were many mentors with the young adults in that area. But there were a couple that would be familiar with the Project Zion podcast listeners, and that is Tony and Charmaine Chavala-Smith. And it was actually Tony and Charmaine that I had talked about some of these things with them about, you know, my struggles with it. And so they knew my journey. They knew my struggles with that. And Tony actually presided over my baptismal service. And he's like, we will handle this in a way, you know. And so we were able to handle it in a way that was very comfortable for me, and still valued my journey with the Lutheran Church and my decision, my previous decision to Christ, and my experiences there. And so I was really grateful for that process.
And just for our listeners, Chris was baptized and confirmed in the Community of Christ before we got to the point where we made the decision as a denomination to accept other Christian baptisms that occur at the age of 8 or older. And people have the option to be baptized and confirmed, or to be confirmed on the basis of a previous baptism if they so choose.
Thank you for that, for clarifying that.
Okay. That's a powerful story, Chris. Did you have something else you wanted to add to that?
So after I graduated from college, I had a year where I was trying to figure out and discern where I was called and where I needed to be, and career-wise and other. And in that, I had a call to the office of priest. Come and also felt a calling to at the time I was, it's for me, it was a sense of full-time ministry, and what that ended up for me being was going to seminary. And I had made the decision to go to ILIF School of Theology, which is in Denver, Colorado. At the time, the Community of Christ didn't have our own seminary. And so it was a conversation trying to figure out, okay, well, where is it that I would feel at home? We had had some folks go through ILIF that were church members. And so they were at least a little familiar with our tradition. And so I made the decision to go there and found myself being able to do that academic study. Amidst all that, I also became we had stakes at that time, stake youth minister, and focused on also, my studies focused on peace and justice ministry. And part of that, the youth ministry position was a lot of like the camps and retreat programming and supporting that. But I also eventually ended up working at a homeless and runaway youth shelter, which really helped me to connect with those that were struggling with their worth. And I also then, from there, I went on and had interned at the Community of Christ International Headquarters as a Peace and Justice intern, and then made my way out to California and serving as a Transformation 2000 Peace and Justice Minister in Sacramento, California, which is where I met Matt. A part of my position out there was in not only congregational support, but also working with Young Peacemakers Club as an outreach tool and teaching about peace and justice, not only in the Sacramento area, but in the larger region as well. I had met Matt briefly early on when I started working there. And then he left for, how long were you gone?
So at the time I was going to school to be an engineer, and part of the engineering program was I had to do co-ops. So I had two co-ops. One was in Michigan for General Motors, and the other one was in the Bay Area with Toyota. And I think it was the Michigan one where I had left for 6 months basically to be over in Michigan and working on cars. That's the time that I was away. And then when I came back is when Chris and I really started to see each other. And the story goes, Chris was asked to do home ministry and to do some of the old school, brothers and sisters in Christ is the program of the time for all the listeners that have gone back that far. But it is basically, it's a cottage meeting style system. You're encouraged to do it with two priesthood members. And Chris was asked to do it with a family that was there, and she wanted to find another priesthood member to do it. She saw this rugged-looking young man and thought, well, he's a priest. He's a priest, so we could probably get together and do it. And that's where our joint ministry really started, and that was to be with families and to joint minister. And
we also basically had weekly dates because we would get together to plan what we were doing before the meeting. So then we'd get together and talk, and then we'd go and visit and have those. But yeah, I think it was in that process of not only getting to know each other and building that relationship, but building and connecting with the families and being able to create safe space where people could express their struggles as well as their in concerns and questions that they have with the church and with their faith in general. And so it was a really good time because we did it not only with, there was a young family, but then we had some young adults also that we had done some visiting with.
So that's kind of our story to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how our two different tales, one is born and raised in the church, one is a convert to the church, one is a youth that feels the call and has always felt the call, another one is a young adult that connects up. And so that's kind of where we get our story to now, well, to then anyway, to us being together.
So tell us a little bit about how you engaged in mission in different ways in different places you've served before now, because there's a span of time between those first home cottage meetings to now, and I know you've had some exciting mission adventures along the way.
So from Sacramento, I was going to college at the University of the Pacific, and Chris had felt a call to serve somewhere, somehow, and I had felt the call to serve somewhere, somehow. So we actually got connected up with World Service Corps, which at the time was looking for the first folks to do a long-term volunteer mission. So World Service Corps is our denomination's version of Peace Corps. And oftentimes they send out young adults to go on summer mission to various parts of the world. For us, it was 2 years, and we had the pleasure of going to a little country in South Central Africa called Malawi. And we basically got married as soon as I graduated from college, and our honeymoon was 2 years overseas. Another American in sight. It was a lot of fun. And we both served there. We did preaching and teaching, and I think Chris has got a few things to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think we did a lot of preaching and teaching. We did a lot of congregational visiting, and we really focused on building relationships and focusing on equality for all people. And also in a culture where men and women lived separate lives, people, when they came over to our house, they knew they were equal partners when they came over to our house. When husbands and wives came, they knew they could kind of almost be themselves together in our space. And I think those were some of the strengths of our time together. I mean, we did, like I said, we connected with the congregations and did team building activities and things like that.
So. And other more mundane things like budget classes and basic classes, which were always necessary.
Yeah. And we supported the Outreach International crew there as well. So that was really cool.
One of the in interesting things, and in preparation for this interview, we were talking about, well, what is our story? And it in Malawi is when we started our tradition, and it's been on and off, but we started our tradition of Thanksgiving dinner with friends. While we were overseas, you know, we're Americans, we understand our Thanksgiving, we love our turkey, except in Malawi, A, they don't have turkey, and B, they don't celebrate Thanksgiving. So we took it upon ourselves to introduce chicken cooked with sage and other savory spices and mashed potatoes.
Wow.
Into our friends in Malawi. And we did it for 2 years. The first year was kind of small, but the second year we had built up relationships with folks there, and we invited a bunch of families to our house. And so we had we cooked a couple of chickens, we made a big pot of mashed potatoes, they brought rice, they brought chicken, we made a couple of mango pies, and really had a meal together with our friends and with our church family to give thanks for the blessings that God had for us. And that kind of started a tradition of inviting people to our house
mm-hmm.
for a meal and to share food with each other. And that's something that we can get into a little bit later. But it was interesting to note that in thinking about it, we started sharing meals at our house a long time ago overseas.
That's awesome. And just a note for our listeners, we're actually recording this on the Sunday before Thanksgiving. So it's kind of fun to hear how you shared Thanksgiving with your friends. And who knows, maybe you were the ones on the planet that planted the seeds of Friendsgiving that so many people do in the last few years. So you came back to the States after 2 years in Malawi. What came next?
So Matt's dad was in southern Iowa, so that's where we ended up planting ourselves when we moved back, because that's where all our stuff was. So we planted ourselves there, and I ended up found myself at Graceland working as associate campus minister there.
And Graceland is Community of Christ University in Lamoni, Iowa.
And for all of you Project Zion podcast listeners, the interview with Blake Smith was the campus minister right before Chris got there.
He helped to hire me. But I worked with Carmen Thompson when I was there, and it was a wonderful experience of being able to support students in mission. Because, you know, I was thinking about, okay, well, what was my role in mission? Really, is riding on the coattails of the students and their passion for outreach and their passion for service and making a difference, and just supporting them in whatever ways we could to help make that happen. And as well, we also worked with at the time we had the community church leadership program, mm-hmm. and working with student leaders there. And so that was a really powerful time. Matt was kind of struggling job-wise during that time. And after a couple of years, well, we had a child, and we had Emily, and finding the Graceland lifestyle of, you know, working and nights and weekends and things, mm-hmm. and trying to have a baby, it was really difficult. So we kind of said, well, where do we need to be? And
so the other thing to note about Graceland is it was at Graceland that Chris and I were both called to the office of elder.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in learning about it, is we were actually called to the office of priest roughly the same time. In chronological time, although separately, this time we were both called to the office of elder at the same time by the same person. And then we were also ordained in the same service. So our ministry really is intertwined and connected. But as Chris mentioned, with a kid and a small family and work and needing probably to have a single income, Southern Iowa really isn't a good place for a mechanical engineer, which is what my degree is in. So we were looking at places in Iowa for mechanical engineers, and if you have ever heard of this company, I found a job with John Deere, and John Deere has a facility in Dubuque, Iowa. And in applying, I got the job, and so as a family, we moved from Leon, Iowa, up to Dubuque, Iowa, and geographically speaking, Dubuque is technically in Iowa, but we have one bridge that goes to Illinois and another bridge that goes to Wisconsin because we're right on the Mississippi.
Wow.
And as such, the closest congregation for Community of Christ is in Lancaster, Wisconsin. So that's where we found our new church home, is in Lancaster, Wisconsin, and that's also where we found ourselves in the Headwaters Mission Center, because Lancaster is in the Headwaters Mission Center. And we started attending the congregation there.
And I do want to add, I think when we made the decision to move to Dubuque and knowing that there wasn't a congregation there, there had been a thought in our conversations and thinking was that, well, maybe we could start something in Dubuque. And so that was 12 and a half years ago. And we had kind of, I feel like God has kind of placed that on our hearts. And it just took us a while to really try to start making that come to fruition. But that had always been from the beginning kind of on our hearts. But when we arrived to Dubuque and we were having, we had a young family and we were trying to get settled and, you know, we planted ourselves in congregational life. And about 4 years though, after we were here, that call didn't go away, that sense of call of trying to do something here. And so not knowing what to do, at the time, Larry McGuire was in Cedar Rapids, which is about an hour from us. And so I called Larry and I said, okay, so what can we do? You know, like we're here in Dubuque, what, give us some advice. And so he came over one evening, we sat along a park along the Mississippi River and we just talked. And he had recommended a book to us amidst all that, which was called The Tangible Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
It's a book by Matt Smay and Hugh Halter. And we read that and it's all about really the focus on building relationships in ministry and connection. And we had this idea after reading that together was that we would start having some dinner parties at our house. And so we would just eat together, like just have people over. And we would just invite anybody we wanted because we were worried about trying to do something religiously or spiritual. We just wanted to connect with people. And so, you know, Matt invited a bunch of people from work. I at the time I had like friends that were part of my mom's groups kinds of stuff. And so we'd invite everybody over. And the original idea was once a month and with a young family, that totally didn't work. But what stuck out of that was annual Thanksgiving parties.
Ah.
And so we started having, we've had probably up to 50, 55 people at our house.
Wow.
For Thanksgiving parties. Yeah. And so last night was our ninth year of celebrating Thanksgiving with friends, usually the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And so, you know, the families have changed over the years and evolved, but we still have had, there are people that came last night that were there at the first one. So all those years ago. And so
the idea was just to build relationships. And yeah. I think that has always been for us the primary connection to getting people into our lives and building that relationships. From all of that, we morphed that idea and it kind of just became, it got quiet. We had kids were getting older. They were in elementary school and you get all of the busy lives that young families have. And we just kind of left it at that. What changed, and this is where we really get into the fun meat and potatoes of what you're wanting to interview us about, which is food and faith. And what changed was a couple of things. One, that call never did ever go away. But what? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was thinking it was really a what? How can we take this to the next level? Like, what do we do now? Like, we've done this, but there was a sense of, okay, what's next? What do we need to do?
And it wasn't until, and I think Chris felt the call more than I did, and she was, apparently she's really in touch with the spirit because she was more sensitive to it than I was. I'm pretty stubborn when it comes to things like that. But when it was 2 years ago, I received the call to the Office of 70. Mm-hmm. And in that call, I was charged with changing my life to one of greater service. And as I mentioned before, I take that stuff very, very seriously. And I prayed about it and I discerned it. And I said, well, if that's where God is calling me to go, then that's what I got to do. And that was the kick in the pants that I needed to be much more intentional and much more serious with what we can do here in Dubuque to share the good news of Jesus Christ with those around us. And so that's what I needed. And with that, and then my ordination thereafter to 70, we started in earnest to really start planning. Okay, well, if that's what we're going to do, let's start making plans. Let's start telling people that what we're doing, yeah, so that they can hold us accountable instead of always just being some place in the future. And then we said, well, let's not just tell people about it. Let's give people a date that we're going to start it. And that's what led us to start what we like to call Food and Faith. It started last year in September at the beginning of the school year. And initially the plan was we're just going to invite a bunch of folks over to our house. We're going to buy cheap carry out pizza for everybody. And we're going to sit around a table. We're going to share our lives with each other. We're going to share a meal together. And then we're going to do a Bible study, and we're going to open the scriptures and we're going to share about it. And what that has become, and I think Chris is probably better at articulating these things, and it's become a sacred space for the group. Mm-hmm. It's become a place where people know that they can share their thoughts, their feelings, their frustrations with the culture in which we live in, their frustrations with the denominations that many of them actually still attend, but aren't connected with because they just don't have a home. And what we offer with Food and Faith is a safe place to have a home. And it started with pizza, and we bought it, and eventually, like, you know what, we can share the meal. So one Wednesday, we meet every other Wednesday at 6 o'clock at our house. And one Wednesday a month is cheap and easy pizza, and then the other Wednesday is generally like a potluck. And we come together and we share the meals. And what we found is that the people and our friends that show up have found a home here.
One of the questions that we get asked when we share about Food and Faith is, well, like, how did you know who to invite? Like, who did you invite? And we started with the folks that came to our dinners, our Thanksgiving dinners. So there's a couple of families that have been to all of our Thanksgiving dinners. And literally it was, hey, we've been to the Davison house before. We know, and our kids like going, and we know that we can just be, and we know our kids will be fine, and so we're going to go. And the other part is that Matt had connections at work that came out of conversations with people at work about faith.
So at work, I am not shy about my faith. For whatever it is, I don't know how to turn that off. That's always been who I am. So I would share that I am an ordained minister at work, and I care about people, and I share the enduring principles, not necessarily with that same language, but I share the enduring principles with my coworkers. And there's, I've actually was able to officiate at a few of my coworkers' weddings, which is a pleasure and a joy to be able to share that part of my life with people that I work with day in and day out. And there was a gentleman there that actually came up to me and says, I want to know more about your church, because your church sounds a lot better than the church, my church. And I want to know, because in Dubuque, it is a Catholic town, and I am not exaggerating by saying that. And this gentleman was disenfranchised with the way that the Catholic Church in our area was treating people that are different, knowing that they are all of worth. And he heard and he sees the way that I interact with my fellow coworkers and the things that I say. And he says, you know what? Tell me more about your church. And that's a strange thing for a born, dyed in the wool community of Christers to actually have someone say, tell me about your church. It feels like we have the best kept secret. And I was super excited to have him. And they were certainly, he and his wife were certainly invited to the start of Food and Faith, and they have attended and they feel connected to the group and they feel safe with us. Mm-hmm. And I continue to invite folks at work to into the rest of my life. So we had two other guys that have been to my house before. They came over last night for Thanksgiving, and I'll continue to invite and share our lives with them.
So as of right now, we're looking at, we have about 10 adults that regularly attend, and we have about 12 kids. We could have anywhere from 12 to 15 kids coming. And so we actually don't have anything, a children's program or anything going on with kids. They kind of, some of them have grown up together. Like I said, they've been coming to things at our house for years. But they go and they do hang out and they have conversations with each other, and they're pretty content with how that works. And it's been working for us. And then the adults then sit, and after we've all eaten, we share and discuss scripture and things going on with life. And we pray and explore some spiritual practices, sometimes depending on what the need is, and pray for peace and those kinds of things. So.
It sounds amazing. And I love just listening to your stories when you met each other and began to be engaged in ministry together. From the very beginning, I heard your focus on creating safe space for people and being attentive to relationship. And it's a beautiful story to hear as that continues to grow and blossom and take on new life. Very exciting. So Food and Faith in Dubuque, Iowa, two Wednesdays a month. Did you start out doing two Wednesdays a month, or did you just kind of start and feel it out with the group?
It's always been two Wednesdays a month. So
we were thinking it would be like every other Wednesday, and it turned out to be about two Wednesdays a month. And part of the benefits of the technology that we have is there is a group text. Rather than sending out emails, everyone's on a group text, and we're pretty flexible. If people can't make it, we just delay it a week. And
I'm always amazed, though, I mean, the commitment that folks have, because, you know, there's some families that, you know, they're working this in amidst picking up kids from dance and, you know, all these other things, but yet they're committed to being there, you know, and it's, that says a lot to me about their experience with the group and their desire to be there, is that it has become a real commitment for them to make it work.
Yeah. Just listening to you all talk about it. And of course I've had opportunity to hear about this as it was emerging. What I'm sensing is people are vulnerable and real and authentic with each other. And any time we can be in safe space in relationship with our fellow human beings and share about the real stuff in our lives, it becomes so deeply meaningful and incredibly relevant. My experience is when we open ourselves to that kind of relationship with folks, the spirit is able to move freely and it becomes what it needs to become. It's a beautiful thing. So I just want our listeners to know that you all are busy people. You have jobs and you still go to church in Lancaster on Sundays in Illinois. And that's not all. You also, pardon?
It's actually Wisconsin. We go.
Oh, sorry. Wisconsin. Sorry. Lancaster, Wisconsin. So you've got one bridge to Wisconsin, one bridge to Illinois.
Yes.
And you also have leadership roles in Headwaters Mission Center. So I'd like to walk into that topic just a little bit and have you each talk about the roles that you currently serve in and what brought you to saying yes to those leadership roles.
I'm going to start with my story. My story was first, interestingly enough, when we arrived into the Mission Center, they were experiencing some struggles. And the reason why is not long before Chris and I joined the Mission Center, the Mission Center was created, and it was created out of two different districts at the time. There was the Wisconsin district, and then there was the Minnesota district, or I don't even remember if it might have been North Star district. I think it was. But they had these two districts, and there was a struggle at the time because each district had their own campground, and the campground was centralized relative to the geographical space of the district. However, with the Mission Center joining together, neither camp was centralized for the whole Mission Center. And what that caused was kind of a unspoken division. You had the folks in Minnesota going to their camp still, and you had the folks in Wisconsin going to their camp. And the question that was placed in front of the Mission Center was, should we sell the campgrounds or not? And that is a topic that is a struggle for any Mission Center to deal with. And it's a struggle because our lives and our faith experiences are often tied to a physical place that we have those memories. And growing up in Oregon, I can say this wholeheartedly, I love Camp Remote. It is literally next to the town of Remote in the middle of nowhere, Oregon. And I have great faith experiences there. But also traveling to California and traveling to other countries and other states, I realized that I can find faith anywhere. But my connection to the Mission Center started because they needed a team to get together and decide once and for all for the Mission Center, should we or should we not, or at least give a recommendation to the Mission Center conference whether or not to sell. And they needed 15 people. There were 5 people in favor of selling. There were 5 people against selling. And they needed 5 people that were neither in favor nor against. And I was asked if I would be one of the remaining 5, mostly because I was young, but also because I don't have any connection one way or the other to either of these campgrounds, but I have a connection to campgrounds and I have a deep fondness of the camping experience. And so I was offered up as someone to listen, and that got me the exposure and connection to a wide variety of folks from the Mission Center. Cause the other thing they wanted was a geographical disparate dispensing of all the people so that it wasn't just localized specific people. So we got together and we met, and through that time I was able to get a bond to others in the Mission Center. And shortly after that group submitted its recommendations to the Mission Center and they were all voted on, I was asked to serve on the Mission Center Council. And our Mission Center has various clusters, so subsets, to help encourage the individual pastors. So they have a cluster minister that is there to call the pastors up and to find out how things are going. And the previous cluster minister is a a great guy, Marv. He actually goes to our congregation, but he was getting up there, and his life required him to not be able to do that. So I volunteered. Sure, I can be a cluster minister, and I joined the Mission Center Council first as a cluster minister and served for a few years. And it was because I had the connections and the relationships with the folks in the Mission Center that I said, yeah, and I like serving. I like helping people. I like listening to the stories. And I honestly also like preaching. I don't know why, but I do. And I served as the cluster minister for a while. Now I currently, as a 70, just serve however I can as a 70. And I also, based on my training and skill set, am the tech guy for the Mission Center leadership. So I support the website and training and making sure that everybody has the right type of software on their computers and connections so that the Mission Center can run as smoothly as we can and serve in mission as best we can.
I would love to hear you just tell us a little bit about the new thing Headwaters is doing where technology becomes missional in the Mission Center. So can you just tell us the plans for what will be unfolding in Headwaters in regards to technology?
In Headwaters, we as a council felt a call that we need to find better ways to connect and communicate. And one of the ways that we have chosen to do it, and we're doing it, and it's in the budget for 2019, is we're going to create tech centers. And what that means is congregations in the various clusters, one congregation per cluster, is going to get set up with a TV, a webcam, a computer, and high-speed internet access that is going to be shared between the Mission Center and the congregation, such that when we have training sessions or we have live events, those congregations can serve as hubs to their cluster so that people don't have to travel between Northwestern Minnesota and Southwestern Wisconsin to get to an event. They can just travel fairly close to where their cluster tech center is. And we're hoping that that allows us to do more things with more people and allows people to connect without having to drive so far. And we really feel that doing that is going to help help that along.
Yeah. Yeah, great way to fan the flames of mission. And if you haven't picked up on it, listeners, Headwaters Mission Center covers a lot of miles all over the place, and they do have harsh winters too.
Yes. And you know, and we found too that there's a big gap, a technology gap with folks. And I think so part of the idea of setting up tech centers is being able to provide a place where people who have very limited technology can go to access, you know, webcasts and other things that from World Church as well as around the Mission Center. So, yeah, trying to fill that gap, I think, a little bit more with those as well.
Yeah.
So tell us about you, Chris.
As I was thinking about this, I'm actually Mission Center leadership for me is a fairly new thing. I've served as pastor of Lancaster for a few years, and I did that, and I've done reunion, directing Matt and I've directed reunion for a number of years, and I actually was involved with, we have a gathering ministries team for Headwaters, and which is a Mission Center team that focuses on our like camping and retreat programming for the Mission Center, and making plans and deciding what we want to do with events each year and addressing any issues that come up, trying to set some policies and those kinds of things. So so I've been on that team for a number of years. But when Matt became the tech guy, he was no longer a cluster minister for our area. And so they had asked me to be a cluster minister. And so I thought, sure. I can do this, why not? And I enjoy traveling as well and connecting with congregations. And so I had agreed to that last fall. and I was going to start that in January. And then January came, and one of our members of our Mission Center presidency team found out they had made the decision to move out of state and out of the Mission Center. And so I received a phone call from that team asking me if I would be willing to be on the presidency team for the Mission Center. And I took it and I thought about it, and it was pretty interesting because like any of the concerns that I had that I would raise as I was praying, I'd be like, God, what about this? And I felt like God saying, kind of taking it from me, setting it over on the shelf, setting it down, and it was no longer a concern. I'd be like praying some more, and I'd be like, okay, well, what about this concern? And I felt God just taking that, taking it from me, setting it over on the shelf. And I just felt like those concerns just kind of melted away from me. And I really, in the end, I was like, well, I have no reason to say no. And I can do this. I guess that's asked about what led you to say yes to that. That's what that came from for me. So
that's exciting. It's a wild ride when you say yes to God.
It is.
Yes, it is.
Never know where you're going to end up.
Yeah, and I've heard in both of your stories early on at a point where you said yes to God for the big picture of what yes means. And then as things unfold, you get clarity on what God has in mind for the next few steps. Very exciting. I love the way you are so engaged with the big picture of church as well as the grassroots. Where you live, being open and responsive to mission as it takes shape in your lives. And food and faith is just an incredible ministry that's continuing to unfold. I think I heard you say a couple months ago that you all were going to be considering some type of service ministry with the group, adding that in as a dimension.
Yeah, I think I'm always thinking, okay, what's next, right? And so this is where Matt and I are good partners. And I lean on his 70-ness in this area too, because I'm like, well, should we start doing this? Maybe we should do this. And he's like, let's just give it time. Let's continue to build our relationships. But we do have a couple of folks in our group that are very active within the community. And so I do see that as a kind of a natural step for our group is ways that we can serve together in the things that we do. So
we're still trying to flush out exactly how that works. And I think it's good that we actually are saying this on a podcast, because again, that comes back to the accountability that we absolutely need to start doing it. So thank you, Robin, for pulling that out. And we had actually talked about, so this is, we're recording this before Thanksgiving, and there is in our town a Thanksgiving meal that gets put on, and we are going to go with the group to serve meals, at least with our family, and encourage others with the group to do it. So we're still trying to understand that service portion, but we are always looking ahead as to what we can do.
Yeah, and my experience is that discerning what comes next with a group emerges out of the group and the relationships in the group. So it's exciting to watch how the hands and feet grow in the group. So you all have had lots of different experiences in mission, and I would be interested from this juncture to kind of look at the big picture of lots of different expressions of mission. Have you seen things emerge that are maybe principles of mission or some key dimensions of mission that have played out across the various contexts of mission, and you've had mission experiences internationally as well as in the U.S. Have you seen anything that is kind of informing you along the way that's consistent and constant in mission?
Where I'm at with the principles of mission and the kind of things that we see is it is first and foremost build the relationships. And we have found that with the relationship comes the next question. So when we were overseas, there was a language barrier with the women. And there was a lot of women that did not understand English because the education system prioritized English for men. And what we found in building our relationship is eventually we picked up the local language, and the women wanted to learn. They wanted to learn English. They said, "Hey, you're learning our language. We want to learn English." And it was those relationships, because they had seen us interacting with them, that caused them to ask the next question. And when we were starting in Dubuque, and I was starting in my new job, and Chris was starting with moms groups to try to understand, we were building relationships. And through that, you get the next question: well, what's going on? And I often get asked, well, what are you doing this weekend? And a lot of times it's, well, I'm doing this thing for my church. I'm going to preach over here. I'm going to talk about that. Oh, really? Tell me about that. And that's another opportunity, because I've already built the relationship with my team, with my coworkers. And I'd say that the key dimensions of mission is we can only go to those people that we have relationships with if we want to make a difference in their lives. And regardless of the context, regardless of the country or any of that, it even going back to where Chris and I met in California, the families that we started doing our cottage meetings with, it was because we also played poker at their house, and we went and we played video games with them, and we were just with them, and we shared our lives with them, and they shared their lives with us. And because of those relationships, they asked, what's next? What, tell us more about the church, tell us more about this community that you believe in and belong to. And it's those are the opportunities that speak throughout. This is the best way, is relationships first.
I think I have struggled along the way in being brave and courageous in my faith. You know, it's easy to sit, people are, you know, talking at the lunch table at work, and to just let the conversation go around and not say anything out of my own faith. And I think there's an ongoing challenge to be brave and to be courageous and to stand up for our faith and for our enduring principles and the idea that all people are of worth, that that we should care for the environment, that we should, yeah, just being bold in our witness. And it's an ongoing struggle for me. But I have found myself in places where I'm like, if I'm even just thinking about it, I'm like, Chris, you're just thinking about it. You should say something, you know, and to try to act on those, inklings to say, yeah, I need to say something, and, or to be that listening ear and to reach out to somebody who looks like they are really struggling, or, you know, that they've really had a hardship going on in their life, and, mm-hmm. and to take the time to connect with them and to check in and see how they're doing, and to be willing to step outside of our comfort zones and, challenge, you know, to be personally challenged to be brave in our faith.
And I would add to that, in mission, to not be afraid of who you are. And as a Community of Christ member, and as someone that has seen our denomination grow and mature over the last years, to say, you know what, the stuff that people are saying on TV is not the Christian understanding that I have. And there is a lot of people out there that need to know that, and that would be life-changing if they did. And I think with my experience with my coworker, it was because he heard me standing up for the poor and the dispossessed, and says, you know what, that is a church that I want to belong to, because that's a place that cares about people. And that guy over there is willing to stand up for the rights of the marginalized in an environment, my office environment, there's a lot of engineers, and there's a lot of folks that I disagree with on a lot of things, but I am not hesitant to share when it comes to standing up for the marginalized and the poor, that there's a line that I will cross if it needs to be said, because that's important to me, and I think that's important to our lives. And it's in those conversations that people realize that's where I want to be, and that's the kind of people I want to connect with. And it gives voice to those that are looking for that spiritual home. And if I didn't speak up, and if I didn't challenge those things, they would never know, and they would never find that home.
So you mentioned, Matt, how the church has journeyed in our faith as a people over the last several years. And we know that mission is different now, but how we think about it, how we talk about it, the kinds of things that we do now in comparison to what we did, 30, 40, 50 years ago. So how would you all describe our current paradigm of mission today?
For me, the current paradigm is about building relationships. Growing up in the church, it was always, growing up in the church on the West Coast, so I grew up with a lot of friends of mine that were Mormon, because Eugene is pretty, there's a large number of Mormon congregations or Mormon stake. But it was always, how can we invite people to church? How can we invite people to church? How can we get them in the pews? And the paradigm today is not that. It is, how can we invite people into our lives? Mm. How can we invite people into relationship and invite people into a relationship with Christ? And I think the mission paradigm today is one that I believe is, it has good roots in scripture, and it has good roots in our own history. And as I was thinking about what mission is, I was reminded, I just read a book about Jesus on the road to Emmaus, and it was about connecting with people and, ironically enough, sharing a meal together. And sharing and breaking bread and building the relationships. And I think the current paradigm of mission is, get out of the congregation and get into your life, whatever your life is, and be authentic, so that you don't have one hat that you wear on a Sunday, but that you have the same hat that you wear all the time, and people can know, well, that's how he always is or she always is. And when you do that, people absolutely respond. And I think the mission is, just be who you are, as weird or as exciting as you are, and don't be ashamed or afraid of it. Just do it.
Yeah, I think for me, in addition to that, to build on actually the relationships, I think a lot of times in our congregations, we get locked into maintaining Sunday morning worship, and all of our time and energy gets spent trying to maintain that, that Sunday morning worship. And to begin to break away from that paradigm and begin instead to look at the needs of the real needs of the folks in our congregational community and the surrounding community, and to begin to ask ourselves, where is God calling us, and how can we share God's love with one another and create that sacred space and to be able to build those relationships in an authentic way? And does that need to happen on Sunday morning? Can that happen in other ways? But to try to expand our paradigm beyond just the Sunday morning hour and to look at our congregational life and ways that we can create sacred community together and open ourselves up to spiritual formation and to leading of the Spirit to guide us in that process.
So Chris, you mentioned courage and being bold as we consider how God is inviting us to build relationships, share parts of our story, talk about faith in our everyday lives. And that can be kind of overwhelming to some of us, and others are already there being bold. So as you think about this mission, this paradigm of mission that's emerging now, what really excites you about that? And do you have any sense of what's down the road? Like if we were to look out 2, 3, 5, 10 years, how do you see mission emerging into the future in the life of the church?
Goodness. I'll take
small.
It.
I was like, those are small questions, Robin.
So what excites me about the mission today that is so much different than what we've done in the past is it is a heck of a lot easier to be authentic all the time. It is a lot easier, and I find myself in our food and faith group just, you know what, I'm going to just put myself out there, and if I mess it up, that's fine. It's perfectly fine. So the stress of having to do it right, the stress of having to try to just be ideal is gone because I don't have to worry about any of that. And what excites me about mission is that is now sustainable over the long term, because the energy that's required to do it is a different kind of energy. Mm. And it's not the kind of energy that drains you. It's the kind of energy that fills you. And when you do that, it's like, we could do this every Wednesday. This is easy. And it's because I don't have to stress about it. And when you think about it, we attend a congregation every Sunday, and we are active members of that congregation and have preaching responsibilities and presiding responsibilities and all of that stuff. And sometimes I get stressed out about that. But then on Wednesdays, I'm like, let's just do this. This is easy to do. And so what excites me about it is when we become our authentic selves, everything else gets easier. Mm. And it's perfectly fine for me to nerd out on Minecraft and Legos, and people are okay with that because that's who I am. And that's the kind of stuff that I really enjoy. And I am an engineer through and through. And that's okay because I don't have to worry about it, and I can share who I am. And when I get excited about sharing my life, that is contagious, and other people get excited about sharing their lives and want to invite others. And then it becomes something that is super easy to invite to because everyone there wants to be there, and that is and is comfortable because they can be authentic. And I think as we look forward into the future, as we all get comfortable with all of our eccentricities and strangeness and just be who we are, that's when I think this understanding of mission can really take off, and we can share and be the community and all of its frustrations and struggles. But because we're real with each other, we work through it and we get it and we make it work. And it just, and you can tell by the sound of my voice that I'm just super excited about this. Really fun.
It is interesting. I'm kind of the same way. Like I was, you know, thinking I get fed, even though, you know, it's being held at our church or our house. I am fed spiritually in the process, and that's exciting to me too. And it's exciting to see the response of people. And I think in Community of Christ, I think sometimes we get caught up in the fact that we look at the size of our congregations. Most of us are really relatively small, and we get discouraged at our numbers, and we compare ourselves to the local large mega church or other very large congregations, and we kind of we get down on ourselves. And I think there is a gift in being the size that we are, and I look forward to the day when we can embrace that as a gift. I will tell you, we have three children, age 9, 11, and almost 13.
Almost.
And they would much rather go to our small congregation. They are much more comfortable in the smaller congregation because they feel at home, they feel accepted, and it's in love for who they are. And I think that embracing our size as a gift and thinking about, rather than trying to compete with the large church, to say, what can we do with this wonderful gift that we have? Mm. That is who we are. And that's all about that relationship. And what can we do based on this, and how can we respond in faith? And that's going to look different for each congregation. I was just up in Sparta, Wisconsin this morning, and ministering and visiting with the folks there. And they, on most Sundays, will also have a group and sharing and learning about the scripture. And that was one of the members just shared that was a real gift for him, that he could come and he could share with their group about the scriptures. And I think, and be honest with his questions and all of those things that we're talking about with community. And I think we need to embrace that and continue to share the love of Christ authentically with those that we come in contact with. And being active in our advocacy for the worth of all persons. So not only looking inward, but that outward, obviously, mm-hmm. with the mission and that outward focus. And I'm excited. I haven't personally been involved, but I'm really excited with those congregations that have been involved with Pride events and that have been involved in the process of becoming welcoming congregations. That is really exciting to me. And I'm looking forward to supporting congregations in our mission center in that process, and for us to also get involved with that as well, and in whatever ways it makes sense in our own context, and advocating, yeah, for the equality of all people. So
that's terrific. You all have shared so many wonderful things with us as you've shared your story of faith and mission. But before we sign off, I want to check in and see if you have any tips that you haven't shared yet for people who want to engage in mission in the places where they live and serve. Just a couple tidbits of information.
The first thing that came to mind when I was thinking about this was perseverance. To keep trying, to be willing to try new things. And be open to that, and don't get discouraged, but keep trying, and that to remember that God is with you in this whole thing. So
to add on to what Chris is saying is the tip is to keep doing it. And the reason why, if you hear our story and as you've listened to this episode, it's been 12 years for us in Dubuque, and mm-hmm. it was in year 10 that we started this. And it takes time. It takes time to build relationships. It takes time to connect and invite people into your lives, and to not get discouraged when it doesn't happen instantly, but to know that it is in God's time and it is in God's ways that these things work. And it might not seem like now, but every seed that we plant and every connection that we make makes a difference eventually. And I think the tip is there isn't a magic formula or any special thing that you can do. It's just be yourself, be authentic, be who you are and let the process work and let it flow. For us, it was a story. It was a while, but it's been a good conversation. It's been a good transition, and it has worked. The other thing that I would say for people that want to engage in mission is step out and be who you are in your community and know your neighbors. We invited, and part of it is, right, we had our Thanksgiving dinner at our house last night, and Emily invited a bunch of her friends over. So this wasn't Chris and I inviting them over so much as Emily wanted to have her friends over. So yeah, sure, why not? They're our neighbors. They live in the same neighborhood. Why not? More the merrier. And that's the seed. Where we go from here, it could be years, but we've started that seed and we've built that connection. And nothing is too small. There isn't anything that is too small to start building those relationships.
And related to that, I mean, I think listening to the kids and involving our children and youth in the process, one of the things we didn't talk about was our kids with the whole food and faith thing. Because we, after the first meeting, we ended it and we found out they were playing murder outside. So this was what prompted outside. So we're like, okay, so we need to have a conversation. And so we had a conversation with our kids about the fact that they are part of this process too. And that they also, I don't know if we used the word ministers with them, but you know, I mean that they are part of that, and they're role models in this and a voice in this is the kind of environment I'm trying to create. And so they have had some ownership in the process. And I think our children and youth are, you know, have awesome ideas and energy and to pay attention to those needs. And sometimes there are some of our best missionaries too, when they want to invite friends to come to things. So.
And that's actually, I was going to add that it's often our kids, and through our story, the family in California that we met with, it was because their son and daughter were really good friends with another young lady at the church, and she just invited them to the church, and because that's what kids don't know any better. They don't have the same kind of reservations that adults have. And to get back to that, and our daughter invited a friend up to a camp, and the friend wants to come back because we have something to offer. And when youth get excited about what is going on, it is just transformative as to they are not shy at all about inviting friends over and sharing with them. So that's another tip, is if you find that your youth are disengaged, that's probably a sign to get them engaged. And let them decide how they want to be engaged.
Absolutely. Exciting. Well, is there anything else you wanted to say before we sign off? Something I didn't ask you about that you were just dying to share?
No.
Like, I don't think I have anything.
We're good. We're good. This has been just a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Chris and Matt, for being with us and sharing your stories about faith and mission. Listeners, if you liked what you heard in this episode, check out the rest of our What's Brewing episodes. We have lots of folks talking about mission and discipleship and how they respond to God's call. This is your host, Robin Linkhart, and you are listening to Project Zion Podcast. Thanks so much for sharing time with us. Take good care and go out and make the world a better place. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.